It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 537 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week I talk with Samuel Satin, who is one of the creative forces behind Unico Awakening, a reimagining of the classic manga. Samuel has a Kickstarter underway for this book, and we talk about the history of the character, what it's been like to take a fresh look at such an established franchise, and what else Samuel is up to in the coming months. I'm sure you're going to enjoy what he has to say in this fun and informative conversation. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show. It's great to welcome to the podcast Samuel Satin, the creator of many interesting comics, a lot of them anime and manga related, Wolfwalkers, the graphic novel version, Bezcamp, which I got to read, Legend, which is a fascinating concept, and The Silent End. And then you have a Kickstarter going on, which is for Unico Awakening manga and stuff. How's it doing, Sam?
It's doing great. Thanks so much for having me on. The Kickstarter is going really, really well, and we're super excited and grateful for everyone who has pledged and supported us.
I always forget this because I get talking about the books and people say, you never say that soon enough, but this is going to, you shot past your goal already, but the project's going to be funded if it reaches its goal by Thursday, June 2 at 11:59 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time.
That is correct. And yeah, we are fortunate to get funded within the first 24 hours of the campaign, which was really, really cool. And since then, it's continuing to grow. We're really excited to see all the enthusiasm around the project.
It's amazing to me because it's the original goal was $50,000.
Yeah.
That's kind of high for a Kickstarter, at least the ones that I'm aware of.
Yeah.
But as we're talking, we're recording this a little early before it posts, you are over 800 backers and almost $84,000. And I'm sure by the time this posts, you'll have shot past that as well. So congratulations. Wow.
Thank you so much. And yeah, it was the thing with a campaign like this is because $50,000 as our base, as our funding goal was a higher ask than a good amount of comics. And one of the reasons for that is because it's a real international collaboration. Mm-hmm. And we have a lot of people that are working on it. Mm-hmm. So we have translators, we have different artists, we have a whole host of people who are contributing. And then we also have the people at Tezuka Productions that are the rights holders for Unico. So it ended up having a little bit of a higher price tag in order to get the whole project funded.
That's great. But you've already, the great part is you zoomed past that already.
Absolutely.
24 hours. Wow. You know how many Kickstarter people would like to have have that under their belts?
Yeah, we're really grateful for the support. I mean, that's just the honest truth. We're just so grateful for the people who have pledged.
Let's talk a little bit about your previous work, and then we'll dive into that full tilt. According to the description I see on Amazon, of all places, it says you're an author and coffee addict.
Yes.
You've written this, so I can't blame anybody for that.
Yeah, no. I am a massive, massive coffee addict. I basically have been, I have to admit that I'm also a bit of a coffee snob at this point.
Oh,
I've gotten to the point where I have to have, like, I have been, I have to. I'm a little more picky about the type of coffee that I'll be able that I want to drink because it's the one thing that my one strong vice. And so, but yeah, I have about probably about 3 to 4 cups a day, which I guess isn't too terrible. Okay. But yeah, I can't. I don't know what I would be able to do without it.
Oh wow! See, I'm just the opposite. If I drink it, I get a pounding headache, so I can't drink it.
Yeah, I know people who have that issue. I don't know. It's just for some reason, coffee and me get along very well.
Well, that's good. That keeps you going. That's the good thing about that.
Yeah.
So that's good. Well, okay, I'm getting all the personal stuff out of the way all at once. I told you before we started recording, I was going to ask about this. It says towards the end of your description, it says he lives in Oakland, California with his wife slash assassin and 2 cats.
Yes.
Why is she a wife slash assassin?
So my wife, her name is Melanie Hilario. She actually also writes comics, and she works with a team of 2 women called Triple Dream Comics. You can look them up. When I met her, she was studying Kung Fu. It happened for a long time. And she's, I just think she's dangerous. She can definitely, she can take me out. She can take a lot of people out. She knows how to use different things around the house as weapons. Not on me in particular, but I remember she came home one day from practice from Kung Fu, and one of the things that she had to, one of her tasks was to look around the house and to log and to catalog everything that could be used as a weapon. In the case of, needing to fight. And I was like, well, that sounds like the primer for, what assassins would have to do as well. So I was like, and so I pretty much started to think of her as like, I'm like, I know that you're not technically an assassin, but that absolutely you could have been an assassin. And for some sort of organization, you could absolutely have figured out how to go around the world and, I don't know, kill somebody with a matchbox.
Well, if you ever watch true crime stuff, they just remind her that every time the husband dies, the first person they look at is the wife.
That's right. So I better be kept alive. That's all I'm saying.
That's the thing.
They won't believe it. They'll meet her. They're like, oh, okay, you did it.
That's funny. I don't know how these people do that and think they're going to get away with it. I'll just never, I always sit there and go like, what? Of course they did it. That's always the spouse.
It really is. Like, isn't it like 96% of the time or something like that?
Yeah, something like that. How do they think that? I don't know. But anyway, let's talk about your stuff. I got a chance to read Bezcamp, which I really enjoyed. It really has an interesting question I got to refer to at the beginning. In the introduction, the first thing you do is ask a question. It says, how important is curiosity to you? And I thought, I had to think about that before I moved off into the description. It's so interesting that this book is based on a society that has basically weeded out all curiosity from people. And it makes for a very different society. And one of the things that you did that I have to mention, I'll let you respond to that, is the language that they use. It's much more phonetic than it is. So that made the book a little, it's 258 pages long. And I was like, wow, but it's really, it's gripping. It was a page turner. And I was just like, man, just amazing stuff about that. And just where did that concept come from? What's that all about?
Well, first of all, thank you so much for reading it. And I'm really glad you enjoyed it. It's actually the idea of Bezcamp did come around from working with I have a book coming out with them next year as well, Rye Hickman, formerly Jen Hickman. The book idea was to create something that really tried to figure out, like, what would it be like if you tried to tear down the past to a point where, you know, you, so the story of Bezcamp is about a a group of people who were kind of refugees from Earth who end up on this planet. And they live in a very, and after generations and generations of being in a very, very, very persecuted, repressive society, they have, they've lost the ability to, where no writing, where writing has been forbidden, right? So there's no, you can't write, you can't read. There's no, writing is considered to be kind of a tool of evil. And in that kind of society where you're not allowed to communicate, via the written word, what kind of happened, how do things break down both linguistically and emotionally and intellectually? And so, and the main character is a character who is curious, mm-hmm. In this framework. And, you know, and the question that I want that we ask, like, what does curiosity mean to you, is meant to kind of explore, his name is Nem, is mm-hmm. Nem's, you know, what would you be able to say that I wanted to think about it for myself, like the idea of, like, you know, I consider myself to be a curious person and somebody who really wants to, who enjoys asking questions and learning about, you know, what I see around me. And, but I have to wonder, you know, in a situation where you are, where you don't have many tools around you to have an outlet for that curiosity, what do you do? how do people actually function? And how do you reach outside of that? And so that was the kind of the story that we were keeping in mind for Best Camp. And I think for me, it's just like the idea that, you know, if you've grown up in any kind of situation where you feel like you are not allowed to, you know, any kind of repressed situation or situation where you're not allowed to kind of move beyond your own means or your own environment. How do people end up doing it anyway? I find that really exciting to kind of think about. Like, how do people end up, like, moving? If, you know, say you were born in a, I mean, this is an extreme example, but say you were born in a compound, mm-hmm. right? Where you're raised in a small place where you're not allowed to see the light of, you're not allowed to see anything outside of that compound. How does one person end up getting out? Mm-hmm. And what is that drive that helps them to get there? And what if entire society was built like that? is the question that we kind of tried to explore with Best Camp.
The language that they speak is different from what we do, and even the writing is, like, the word they is DEY and what is WUT. And stuff like that. And you have to kind of get into that. As you get into the book, it's easier. But starting out, I kind of had to go, wait a second. Okay, I got to adapt to this. Was that tough to write, or was it actually easier to use language like that?
So it was tough to write at first. And then the thing is kind of like once we set up the conventions for the different words they used, and it became a lot easier. We figured out what all the pronouns were and what all the different kind of thing, the names they had for different things in society, it became easier. Mm-hmm. We came to understand when the book came out that some people had trouble with it. Mm-hmm. And I understand. It's one of those things where it's like, we wanted to really try to accurately show what it might look like if language breaks down. But at the same time, there are drawbacks to that, in which, you know, when you're reading a book like that, you have to kind of say, like, okay, am I willing to let myself, you know, get into this phonetic way of speaking, mm-hmm. Or is it a little bit too outside of my comfort zone to get into? Which I understand. I think it's an interesting conversation. Some people, when they read Best Camp, they're like, I couldn't handle going through it. I couldn't handle reading it like that. It really was difficult for me. And some people, like yourself, would say, like, you know, no, I was able to, it was a little tough at first, but then I got into it and I really enjoyed the effect that it had. Mm-hmm. And that's what we were. And so I guess that the thing with Best Camp is, and we didn't intend it for it to be this way, but maybe it wasn't an easy book because of that. It was a harder book it was a little bit more of a challenging book, and I'm okay with that, but at the same time, I do understand if it's when people say it's, you know, I would have preferred if it was easier to to get through.
Well, I got even the title. Is that supposed to be Best Camp?
It's supposed to be Base Camp.
Base Camp, okay. Yeah. I thought it was Best Camp or something like that.
Yeah, so they end up talking about they call their town Base Camp, and you can see that there's if you look for clues around this story, you can actually see that there are on crates and stuff. It says Base Camp, mm-hmm. and so they started calling it Best Camp over time. And that became the name for where they lived. But yeah, it might have worked in some ways. It might have worked better as a film or a mm-hmm. teleplay or something like that in, mm-hmm. in the phonetic language, because as a graphic novel, I think one of the things that is, and I'm just speaking very frankly about the work, is that I think that in retrospect, graphic novels, like in comics in general, there's this thing about moving through them quickly. Mm-hmm. Right. And Best mm-hmm. Camp does make you kind of slow down and have to kind of go through and read things a little closer, which I can see for some readers be like, well, it's just not exactly what I'm used to. And I prefer not to go that way.
Well, so, but you don't want every book to be the same, though.
That's what I hope. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm very proud of Best Camp. I just think it brought up a lot of interesting conversations for me about how comics are supposed to, what people think comics are supposed to be. And, and what people's reading experiences are like when they're going through them.
Mm-hmm. Now you write prose as well as comics, right?
I do.
Yeah. Cause I think that was The Silent End. Is that prose?
The Silent End is prose. Yes.
Ah, okay. I thought as much, cause I looked at it. I couldn't ever find it in the comic section. So I figured it must be prose.
Yes. Yeah. No, it is prose. And it's, I'm actually working on it for about 6 years. We're working on another prose novel right now that I'm in the process of doing a second edit on and hopefully finishing up soon.
Cool. Now, I got to talk about another couple ones real quickly. Legend, which came out from Z2 Comics. It's the story of humans have largely been eradicated from the planet and the animals have taken over, and Legend is the name of one of the dogs. Talk a little bit about that one, because I'm always fascinated. There was a series that came out not long ago in which animals became conscious or cognizant. They were able to speak with humans, same language and everything.
Is it Animosity?
Yes. That's the one. I literally was reading it and I looked down, I had two dogs sitting at my feet, and I thought, what are they actually thinking?
Yeah.
Right now, if they could talk to me, what would they tell me? You know, kind of stuff. So that's kind of stuff I like. So if you're aware of animosity, was Legend before that? After that, was that something separate?
Legend was before Animosity. Mm-hmm. It came out in 2016. I think Animosity was 2018, 2017. I'm not exactly sure. It came before that. And it was, well, the way that we started talking about it popularly to get people primed for it was it's kind of like Watership Down meets The Walking Dead, which we had. One of the things that I really love about Watership Down is the mysticism in it. Mm-hmm. The rabbits all have kind of a religion, and they have prophecies and things like that. And that really is interesting to me. So we kind of took that model in some ways for Legend, but we made it about a group of dogs in a post-apocalyptic world that are attempting to find a new, have their leader lead them to kind of like a new promised land, you know? They have to engage with members of the cat tribe in order to do this, which are kind of like their frenemies. They're enemies. They're probably more enemies, but and I was working on it with an artist named Chris Kaler, who's a really interesting illustrator. He's a great illustrator. And it was his first time doing comics. And we were able to finish the first five issues, but still, unfortunately, to this day, it has yet to be completed. So we're hoping to be able to complete the series in the future. But it's supposed to be a 10-issue series, and we got to issue five. It's a story that I really think is beautiful, and we had a great time working on it.
Cool. Well, I hope we get to conclude, because I want to read that. A lot of the concepts in your books are fascinating to me. I'm really intrigued by them. Talk about two more real quickly before we start getting into the to Unico. Wolfwalkers, which is an adaptation of a movie into a graphic novel. Isn't that, I always think that's a challenge. You know, you've got a movie that apparently is really popular, or popular enough for somebody to want to turn it into a graphic novel. You have to be true to the comics medium while also being true to the movie. How challenging was that for you?
It was a great challenge. I really enjoyed it. Enjoyed working on it. Basically, the Wolfwalkers is based off of a cartoon saloon film, which is started by Tom Moore in Ireland, or an Irish studio. Mm-hmm. And Wolfwalkers is just this incredible story about this myth of people who turn into wolves at night or the ability to turn into wolves. It comes down, it's very much about nature versus industry and new religion versus old religion and things like that. And kind of also has its roots in Celtic mythology. Mm-hmm. And it's just this brilliant story. So when I got the chance to be able to adapt it for a graphic novel, I was kind of just overjoyed to be able to try to work on this. And it did present a lot of unique challenges, which was trying to figure out how to take this, as you were saying, a completely different medium, mm-hmm. and transition it to comics and make it work for comics. Mm-hmm. What we noticed as I was going through it and working on it was that you have to we had to have some design additions for sure. We had to have some modifications to make it actually function as a comic, because there were some scenes that, you have to bring certain things to the forefront in comics. It's kind of what's a really good analog for it actually is when you read a manga and then you watch an anime, mm-hmm. You'll see that what they do in anime is they often draw directly from the manga, mm-hmm. and they take the key shots, mm-hmm. in the manga that are really, really powerful, mm-hmm. and they make them stand out and they slow them down in the animated version. So in a way, I was kind of reverse engineering that, in which we had to find the moments of action and momentum and the moments that were the action moments that were, mm-hmm. really big action beats, and pull them out and put them into panels, mm-hmm. and then make sure that that the text that we used accompanied it correctly. And that we also kind of messed around with the dialogue. So, I mean, it is a challenging exercise, but it's also a really fun one, mm-hmm. In which you get to kind of see how you can actually move one medium to another.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah. I love doing it. I love working on it.
That's one I haven't read yet. I started to watch the movie, but I haven't got to get into that, because it really looks fascinating. One more thing we'll touch on real quickly before we get to Unico. Glint Book One, The Cloud Raiders. I've got to read the description. It says on Amazon, it's a motorbike riding warrior grannies must help a small miner boy named Loon withstand a regime that's been brainwashing its people for generations while being attacked by monsters called feeders.
Yeah, it was an ambitious project. Yeah, no, I have a thing with motorbiking grannies. I don't know what it is. And this old and older. Actually, it's funny. A small anecdote that when I was first, I first got a shot when I was starting out writing to pitch a story for a big publisher that they wanted to do, have somebody ghostwrite, mm-hmm. about this kid who takes his grandma to prom. It's kind of like this cute YA middle grade book. Mm-hmm. And they asked me to write a couple of chapters. And I made the grandma this raging alcoholic kind of who was also kind of a badass and all these different things. And it was kind of the same model. And the publisher looked at it, they were like, this is interesting, but we don't know if we'll fit in for our demographic. And so I didn't get the job. but I think I did realize that, there's something I do have for this idea of this strong warrior grandma, you know, is something that I really get into. Glint was really fun to work on. The artist had to drop off the project due to some personal issues, unfortunately. So we weren't able to finish that one. I have the scripts for the other two books that are sitting in a drawer. So hopefully one day somebody will see them. You know, but like I think that that is, yeah, it is a big story. And I think that one day we'll be able to bring it to an end.
Because I occasionally get emails where people want me to review stuff, and I got that book. I got a review copy of that, and I was reading through that, and I found that interesting too. It's all your books require an imagination to go into. If somebody only can deal with real people all the time, they're not going to be able to dive into your books as strongly as they might other like superhero books and stuff like that.
Right, right, right.
But I find them really fascinating because I like variety in my reading. I like to see something I haven't read before. And so for me, I really enjoy those things. So either Glint is going to be great. I haven't finished it yet, but I'm enjoying reading it. And it's really, really interesting to see. It's really good stuff.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you.
All right. So let's get to Unico Awakening, because I was talking about, you know, the challenges of doing a translating something. This is a massive translation project. This is, you know, and maybe you might do a better job of describing the history of Unico than I might, because you're much better at anime than I am. Why don't you talk about what Unico is all about?
Let's see here. So basically, Unico is a story based off of Unico's story by Osamu Tezuka. And Osamu Tezuka is considered to be the god of manga in Japan. So he's kind of the guy who people in the United States kind of know him more as the creator of Astro Boy. But he really, the scale of his work and the amount of work that he created is enormous. And he really did start modern manga and modern in the modern animation industry in Japan, industry. He is responsible. So, you know, he and the people that surrounded him are responsible for bringing that into being. And Unico was created in 1974. It ran for 2 years, 1974, 1966, 76. It's a story about a unicorn, a small unicorn that is who is essentially able to inspire people through sheer kindness and the power of like imparting beauty and kindness to others. This is so much so, in fact, that he attracts the ire of the goddess of love, Venus, who has him banished from the heavens and asks her servant, the West Wind, to carry him across space and time and banish him to this place called the Hill of Oblivion, where he'll wander in eternal solitude and forget who everything he was. Right? So it's this really kind of like punishing thing for this small unicorn. And the West Wind, though, takes her servant takes pity on him and ends up, you know, not dropping him on the Hill of Oblivion, but ends up dropping him in the human world. And whenever he wakes up in the human world and is able to use his powers of kindness, and whenever people are kind to him and he forms friendships, his power grows, he's able to do incredible things. But the more he does that, the more he is also attracts the eyes of the gods. So she has to wipe his memory again and take him to a different place. So she ends up kind of going from place to place throughout time, always making friends and helping people, only to forget everything he's done and forget his past deeds and have to start again anew. So it's almost like he lives these separate lives, almost like a reincarnation story. And it's so one of the things about Unico that I really love is that even though it's this kind of cute little unicorn, it's actually kind of it's a heavy story. And it's a complex story. It's a fable. About love and loss and the nature of beauty and all these different things and the evils of vanity. And so, you know, that's kind of the origin of Unico. I believe it was in collaboration with Sanrio when it first came around, and it was also done during a very difficult period in the, in Tezuka's life when he created it.
Mm. Well, from what this news release says is that this particular story is a reimagining of the arc, The Cat on the Broomstick.
That's correct.
I can read the quick paragraph that talks about what it is. It says, in this reimagining, Unico befriends a stray cat named Chloe, and the two new friends aid an old woman who Chloe mistakes for a witch. When Chloe realizes Unico can do actual magic, she begs him to turn her into a human for a few moments each day. Unico agrees so long as Chloe doesn't lose touch with her feline identity. When a dangerous man, the goddess Venus, set out to destroy Unico, the spirit of the West Wind must search the ends of the universe for a way to end Unico's eternal cycle of suffering.
That's correct. So yeah, so the Cat and the Broomstick is, so the way that the original comics are formatted is that each chapter he kind of goes to a different, he's taken to a different time and era, right? And kind of makes new friends and has an adventure and then gets taken to a different era. Right. Mm-hmm. So the Cat and the Broomstick, he gets taken to, I'd say it's probably like more modern times. And he befriends this cat named, who we're naming Chloe, and an old woman who's kind of losing her memory. And they're troubled by this this local hunter who is this kind of sadistic guy in the comics named Baron de Ghost. We call him Byron in the new version. And so that story in particular, I picked for the to adapt because it is, first of all, it's one of the larger stories in the book, in the comics. Mm-hmm. And second of all, it has a lot of themes that I think are really, really fascinating. Mm-hmm. So you can really draw a lot from the themes of the Cat and the Broomstick about like identity. So for example, there's this cat in the story that doesn't want to be a cat anymore, that wants to be a human and gets the chance to do so. Mm-hmm. And and the effect of doing that is both good and bad, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, so there's a lot going on in the story about identity and accepting who you are and what happens when you try to leave your identity behind. There's also a lot about the nature of not respecting nature. There's not a lot about not respecting nature and like the idea of this hunter who becomes this it's particularly a sadistic hunter who becomes the villain of the story, has absolutely no respect for the natural world. And in Tezuka's eyes, that was a really terrible way to be. Hmm. So we kind of get to kind of explore ideas about eco-consciousness and things like that, which was a big part of Tezuka's work. So a lot of it is about, the themes are really, really large and really, really great to kind of explore. And also we get to kind of, homage a story that I think and you know, the work of a person who I don't think always gets enough spotlight in the United States, especially. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of that's our hope with working on this.
Now you're doing this both in the native language and also in English, right?
That's correct. So we're doing it both in English and Japanese. Yes.
Okay. Very good. So, you talked about, you know, adapting a work, and with this one, which is a big name in the anime world, how, you know, what was that like having to adapt this? They didn't want it to be a direct adaptation. They want you to update it on some levels. So what was it like to try to remain true to the original focus of the story, but also try to, you know, update it to something that would be more, something that people today would appreciate?
That's a great question. It's definitely there's it's a large responsibility and something I don't take lightly. Mm-hmm. It's something that I feel incredibly, you know, grateful and kind of awestruck to be able to participate in, because, you know, Tezuka himself, his work really left a big impression on me. I started reading him a while back, and I really was, a lot of his works just kind of changed my life. Particularly, when I read this book of his called MW, they call it Mu in Japanese. And, I actually found out he wrote it at the exact same time that he wrote Unico. which is makes a kind of strange sense to me. But it's, you know, working with somebody's work like this, in some ways, it's incredibly intimidating. And it's also really wonderful, because what I love about Tezuka himself as an artist was that he loved collaboration. And he loved the idea of iterating on stories and having other people iterate on his stories. So it's like, you know, one of the things that's wonderful with working with Tezuka Productions, the company that's his namesake, is that they also feel that way. So, you know, when they're creating, when you're, what they kind of explained to me from what I understand was like the idea of having, if you have a core understanding of what the work is trying to get across, they don't really mind changing the details. And in fact, they kind of welcome new interpretations. So the idea of kind of building something new from the, you know, the IP of, from the work of somebody who, you know, who laid the foundation is really appealing to them. And I love that about Tezuka, and I love that about working on this project. So like, for the artist team that I'm working with and the co-creator of this project, Gurihiru, which they felt the same way. Like, they were a little bit nervous, like, when they were going to come on and work on this. They were like, and especially since they're from Japan, they're Japanese, and, you know, which puts a whole entire new level of pressure on them, because they have to work with this person in Japan who's just like this icon, right? But then when they figured out that they would be allowed to kind of have their own expression of the project, and they were encouraged to do so, that kind of changed their outlook, and they were way more excited about coming on.
Now, my understanding, it's 172 pages.
Correct.
It's the Eisner Award-winning artist team from Superman Smashes the Clown, which I bought and I really enjoyed.
It's great, right?
It's Gurihiru. I'm just sure I'm butchering everything with this stuff.
It's kind of a tough name to pronounce, because it's, yeah, Gurihiru.
Okay. Yeah, I trust you to do that and get that.
No problem.
Mine's not so good. So, but it's really interesting. So how far are you? Have you finished with the script and stuff?
So I'm working on the script currently, and we're both and we're going to be batching it in you know, batched order to get kind of pages out in chunks. So yeah, we'll be releasing. Well, most more will be done soon. But right now, yeah, the script is being worked on at the moment.
Cool, cool. Now, you've got several artists that are doing prints to go along with it. And the name, is, as I was telling you before we started recording, that I recognize is Peach Momoko, who is doing a lot of work for Marvel and other companies, I think, these days. So that's a real coup to have her doing three different prints, looks like. And we get to see them on the Kickstarter page.
Yeah, that was a huge, that was a really wonderful thing to have Peach Momoko on board. And the fact that she wanted to do three prints, it's actually really interesting. So, like, you know, one of the lovely things about this project is that, especially from the artist, with the artists that grew up in Japan, they kind of grew up with this character. You know, this character, Unico, was something they read as kids. And so when it came to the point where we were able to talk about it as a, you know, as like, you know, we asked them, we were propositioning the artist to be able to do this. There was no sense of, well, we'll see. I don't know. They were like, yes, please. I would love to work on this. Right. And then Peach Momoko was like, she was like, can I do three? And we're like, yes, please. Three. And so it was a really wonderful, kind of unexpected thing that we got those three pieces from Peach Momoko, and I know I can't wait to hang them on my walls. So yeah, they're really striking and gorgeous. She did a fantastic job.
Now, are the other artists people that who are into anime would know? Because I'm sure I'd butcher them if I try to pronounce them. Except Tom Moore, I think I can get, and I think Su Lee, I think I can actually pronounce. But the other ones, are they people that anime fans would know?
Yes. So Su Lee is an American artist, and she's worked on a variety of different comics. And Tom Moore is the person who actually did the Wolfwalkers film. So he's the person who is in charge of that. The artist, more of the artists, we have Katie Longeway, who is an American artist. And then we have who's really talented and actually works with my my wife on the projects. And then for the other artists, we have Kamome Shidahama, who does this really, really wonderful series called Witch Hat Atelier. That's very powerful. That's very, very, very well known in the United States and abroad. And it's kind of like a very sophisticated, interesting take on wizarding and kind of almost like a wizard school, but in a very different way than Harry Potter ever approached it. That's really great. And then also we have Akira Himekawa, who does the Legend of Zelda manga, all the Legend of Zelda manga that have been pretty big in the United States and abroad. And then we also have Junko Mizuno, who's actually who's a Japanese artist who does a lot of like gallery art as well, and does a lot of design art, a lot of things for a lot of different large companies, and has also put out a lot of books. And she's really well known in the U.S. and has kind of like this awesome cult appeal, and is one of my favorite artists. So she did a print for our project, but she also did some, which also was crossed over into t-shirts as well. That's kind of the rundown of the people who did prints.
Okay, great. Because obviously you're offering something good, because you, like I said, in 24 hours you had your pledge, your goal met, and so you're doing other good things. I was just sort of curious, though. I was thinking about, how different do you think this ended up being from the original story? Do you think it's somewhat different? I mean, will people be surprised if they read the original story, some of the changes you made?
I think that our goal with making this is to both homage and to reinvent. We're calling it a reinvention because we're not doing a direct, we're doing a, in some ways it's direct adaptation. We're also digging into the characters a little deeper in different ways and giving some characters larger roles than they had in the original. So what we're trying to do is we're definitely homaging the original. And I think that fans of the original will be pleasantly surprised with what they get out of it. What they see in the book, but we're also kind of opening up the universe a little bit more so that we have, so that we can kind of give the characters, again, larger roles, and also kind of provide a possible kind of conclusion to the story, because the story was never actually finished. So that's something that we're also doing. So I think that, you know, because like a lot of Tezuka's work that was made in the 70s, you know, it's brilliant, but also, you know, has some things that are kind of relegated to its period, time and period. And so one of the goals with this is to kind of open it up to a new generation of readers. And so we want to make sure that people that have never heard of Unico before can get into this story, while people who have heard of it and who are fans, find plenty to latch on to, and even something new and exciting for them.
Okay, well, given that it's already a success, do you have any other projects in the Unicoverse, as you might call it, to do, or is this going to probably satisfy your need to do this?
I can't really speak to that as of yet. I will say that I'll just say that right now we're focusing on the Kickstarter, but you know, things could happen that would be really incredible for Unico. We'd love to see, you know, the universe expanded.
Wow. Okay. So in other words, get in there and support it.
Yes.
Don't wait. People always wait till the last minute and then they say, oops, I missed it. No, don't do that. The thing to do now is to get on there now and support it. And again, it's called Unico Awakening Manga. And I can't pronounce the wonderful, I can get your name, Samuel Satin, at the end. But Guru Hiru, I'll get that eventually.
It's a hard one. It's because it's got two. It's the eyes that are so close.
It's too. I'm too American. I'm not good with beautiful names. I'm just not. But anyway, be sure to get there and support that. I mean, right now it's already a success, and you know it's going to happen. But we want to make sure that plenty more comes, because this is really. It's looking like it's a great fun story to read, and I can't wait to do it. I'm going to be interested to see what kinds of things you do with it. It should be a lot of fun.
Oh, thank you so much.
Now, there's a couple other projects, though, according to Amazon, that you're up to. There's a book called Buzzing, A Little Brown for Young Readers, supposed to come out in spring of 2023. Something called Side Quests in 2024. And the one that I'm most looking forward to, because I don't know much about it, is Crunchyroll's Essential Anime, Fan Favorites, Memorable Masterpieces, and Cult Classics. So that's the one I really want to do, just because I, like I was telling you before, I got into it at a certain point, and then I just sort of drifted away. There was a time when it was tough to get anime here and manga here in the U.S., and I just kind of got out of it. But luckily, you were in there a long time, so that looks like it's going to be a good book to have.
Yes. Yeah. So basically, like, it is a really, basically the book, it's co-written with my colleague and friend, Patrick Macias, who lives in Tokyo and has kind of been really worked in the world of anime and manga for a long time and Japanese pop culture in general. And, he and I, were commissioned to write a book for Crunchyroll about 50 essential anime projects and their kind of historical relevance, where they come from. We ended up getting, so each of us ended up doing 20 essays, and then we got 10 contributors, 5 contributors come on to do about 2 essays each. So it really is a far reaching guide to kind of not just anime that people and fans could get into and fans could, that existing fans could get into, but also that people that have never gotten into anime could kind of like, you know, sink their teeth into and want to learn more about the medium and the history of the medium. So it's pretty exhaustive that way. It's a pretty big book. As of the moment, it's delayed because we're trying to figure some things out with it, but it will hopefully be on sale soon, and I hope that everybody will enjoy it.
Well, I'm looking forward to it, as I said, because this is something that I'd like to know more about. And absolutely, I think that's going to be a book worth having. So, well, Sam, it looks like, you know, based on the stuff I've read, I need to read more of your stuff.
Oh, well, thank you.
Because it's just going to be great stuff. Because like I said, the Best Camp was just, didn't know what was going to happen next. As someone like me who's been reading comics and stuff for many years, I love to be surprised. And so I'm dying to read Legend. That's one I hope you get to do those last 5 issues.
Oh, thank you.
And the other ones, I'm just going to have to, if I see your name on it, I'm going to be picking it up. Because
I think it's going to be good stuff. I appreciate that. Thanks so much.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
And that's it for this week. Be back next time when we'll have another great interview with another terrific comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.